Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintec Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Is his microphone working? Let's try that again. One, two, three. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
There we go. A-Dog's in the building. A-Dog, good morning.
Good morning.
And we got Laddie in the building as well. Greg Ballack. Good morning, Greg Ballack.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics providers, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net.
I'm having headphone difficulties again today. It's tough. We have this brand new shiny studio. We have the junk collection behind us known as,
There's a lot of old bobbleheads there.
I don't know what that is.
Why do we have a Dan Cluche bobblehead and... Like, did you just throw the, like, a James Paxton bobblehead, Wally Buono bobblehead, or do we get this at a garage sale? Or?
That's what I'm wondering. See, I will say this. The new Kintec studio looks gorgeous. For those that can't see our streaming today, because we're not streaming today, we have a beautiful desk. We have new televisions. It's very symmetrical and well-lit. It looks professional. And then we got this thing behind us, which is basically someone's stuff that their mom put away when they were 10 and have brought out when they were 30.
It's pretty accurate, actually.
Well, that's it.
I'm jealous. And you
still
want
your Matt Cook bobblehead?
The Kirk McLean McDonald's mask giveaway is the thing I'm gravitating towards.
There's a Kirk McLean McDonald's mask somewhere here?
Yeah, right in the middle.
I like how there's just a tennis ball here. Is it a special tennis ball? No, it's just a tennis ball.
What do you guys do here? All the sports.
We love sports.
We found all this stuff in some guy's car yesterday. Just figured, you know, hey.
I was going to say, The value of the contents was actually more than the car. Anyway, I bring all this up because, one, we are not streaming today. Two, if you want to listen to us, HD3 is kind of in limbo. Everything else is working, though, which is terrific. We have a big lineup of guests today on the program. Beginning at 6:30, you see him on Sportsnet every Saturday. Host of the NHL coverage, David Amber, is going to join us. 7 o'clock, Sean Gentile from The Athletic. We'll go around the NHL with him. So we're going to go real NHL heavy for a second consecutive day. 8:05. Note the start time. 8:05, we're going to talk to Murph ahead of the Canucks and Oilers game tonight, which I will add is not televised. From Abbotsford, won't be on TV, so you have to rely on alternative media methods to pay attention to the game tonight.
They might be streaming it on their website. Apparently.
They are.
Yeah, the Canucks are going to stream it on their website. No TV, no Sportsnet TV Wednesday or Friday. Friday is going to be all about the baseball and the Blue Jays Mariners series starts.
So that is what our guest list looks like today. I will mention, of course, Canucks Oilers from Abbey. If you missed it yesterday, the Canucks are sending my much more big boy lineup out to Abbotsford tonight for their game against the Oilers. The Jays will continue their series against the Orioles tonight. Bigger story, of course, is that they are officially locked in to a playoff with the Seattle Mariners. Not only is this the first time that these two teams have been in the postseason together, it's the first time that they are obviously ever going to meet in the postseason. We'll talk about that in what happened. There's a bunch of exhibition games. I should mention, there's a Raptors exhibition game tonight, guys. A Raptors exhibition game. They're playing the Celtics.
We're a big Raptors station.
That's what we do here at Sportsnet 650. Finally, I will mention big day in the Champions League after a big day yesterday. Marquee matchup is Chelsea-Milan. And, of course, you get Paris Saint-Germain against Portuguese Giants Benfica. That's what's happening on the program today. Gentlemen, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
Again, for those of you that don't care about the baseball, we have to start with the baseball. Two huge stories yesterday, both in a historic nature. The first, of course, is the Toronto Blue Jays are now slated to take on the Seattle Mariners in the American League wildcard round, which begins on Friday. Three games in 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It all goes from the Rogers Center. The Mariners got into that spot by beating the Tigers in extras last night. Then it was made official after the Sox beat the Rays in a rained, shortened game. You threw out the question yesterday, and I thought it was a good one until the obvious one hit me in the head. Have Toronto and Seattle ever played in anything significant before, brackets, besides the MLS Cup final?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the only one? When I threw that question out, I was like, I didn't remember the MLS Cup final, and as soon as I pressed publish on the old tweet machine, I was like, oh, I think they oh, God. Oh, the MLS fans are going to be all over me. It's like, it's called Major League Soccer, so obviously it's a major thing.
Follow-up question, were the MLS fans actually all over your case?
They didn't care.
See, they didn't even care.
No.
So we were going to get a pretty cool series, I might say, and also very polarizing, perhaps, for the Lower Mainland.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of different poll questions yesterday trying to gauge the temperature of Vancouver sports fans, where their allegiances lie, because, like you said, you're a Mariners fan in part because of the proximity, and you grew up in an era where Ichiro, Ken Griffey Jr., Edgar Martinez, great players came through Seattle.
Yeah, but I'm a Jays fan.
But you're a Jays fan.
I'm a Jays fan overall. They were my first love because the Mariners were so bad and because we got more coverage of the Jays in terms of their games being on TV when I was a kid growing up. It wasn't every game like the lucky kids get these days, but it was a lot of games. And the Mariners were awful. You know, for pretty much from when I first started watching baseball in the mid-80s, the Jays were a contender.
Mm-hmm.
But I got into those Mariners teams. It's funny, like I really don't have like a hardcore allegiance. Like Laddie's going to be all over the Jays, will cheer hard against the Mariners. To be perfectly honest with you, and I don't know, maybe I'm, you know, maybe I'm going to get fired by Rogers for saying this. If the Mariners win this series, I'll be perfectly happy because I think it's kind of sad that the Mariners have made the playoffs after all these years of missing and they aren't guaranteed a home game. Right?
If you get fired by Rogers, it'll probably be for something more severe.
Than like cheering for the Mariners?
I hope so.
Yeah, I honestly, if the Mariners win, I'll be happy for them because I would like to see a home playoff game for these Mariners fans, like the hardcore fans that have stuck by this team, for them to just go to Toronto and like play two or three games. And they're like, wasn't that fun? Not really. wasn't that worth the wait? No.
I will be cheering for the Toronto Blue Jays because I like being employed. Also because of the two teams, the one that I followed significantly more thoroughly and closely. And I actually do genuinely like a lot of the guys on this team. I think that they're young, they're exciting. I think that they've got the most upside in terms of talent, and I would love to see a sustained run. Essentially, at this point, I don't need to see any more of the Houston Astros making runs throughout the playoffs. I think we can all agree that that needs to end. And you know what? The Yankees had a regular season where I think they got shoved down my throat enough. I don't need to see the Yankees anymore. So I would like to see the Jays take care of business against Seattle and then propel them and to go on a run. That's what I want to see.
Well, for the record, I'm sure you're aware of this because you're such a hardcore sports fan and you look at formats.
Yes.
Just so everyone knows, though, there's no reseeding in the postseason. So whoever wins Toronto or Seattle and the other series is Cleveland and Tampa Bay. The winner of Toronto-Seattle plays Houston.
Correct.
The winner of Cleveland-Tampa Bay plays the Yankees. Yep. They are locked into that bracket. So if you were hoping, if you're a Jays fan and you're like, I hate those Yankees and I want to play them, the only way that can happen is in the ALCS.
Right. So there's your path. Mariners, Astros, Yankees. What a run that would be.
That would be unlikely, but it would be incredible if it were to happen.
Well, let's turn our attention to Laddie here for the second consecutive day wearing some Blue Jays swag. Are you already deep into the weeds of what the rotation is going to be like, how the bullpen might shake out, what the roster is going to look like, what kind of lineup, what kind of 1-9 is John Schneider going to put together? You have to be excited. This is the first time, really, I'm not counting 2020. This is the first time since 2016 that the Jays have been in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, it might be like the Mariners experience where the Jays go to Tampa and play a couple games and go home. That was their playoff experience. But no, I don't read too much into what the potential lineup is because I have no control over that. You wait till the manager releases it. And yes, you can speculate. And we talked about it yesterday about, you know, Espinal coming back from injury. But the lineup's pretty much locked in for the Jays. I'm just ready for the series to get started. And, you know, Manoah's going to be game one. That's all that matters to me. Game one, Alek Manoah on that mound.
So the Jays were 2-5 against the Mariners this year, including that four-game sweep in Seattle where all the Jays fans went down, and then they got their entire weekend ruined on the field, which was awesome. I do love that. How concerned are you with this particular opponent? Because obviously up until yesterday, it was either Toronto's going to play Tampa Bay or Toronto's going to play Seattle.
Tampa Bay's kind of scary because the Jays suck in Tampa Bay.
Yes.
The series would be at home, but you get a bad taste in your mouth from playing that Rays team. I don't know what it is. They're pesky. I don't like them. But I think the Jays just match up a little bit better against the Mariners. As we said yesterday, Mariners a little bit prone to give up the long ball.
Yes.
We know the Jays like to hit the long ball. So in a short series, it kind of all goes out the window. But I think if we got to pick a team that they match up better against, it's the Mariners.
So this is the first time the Mariners have been in the playoffs since 2001. Mm-hmm. That was the year they won 116 games. Ichiro's rookie season, if you can believe that. That's how long ago it was.
Lou Piniella was the manager.
They lost to the Yankees in the ALCS for the second straight year, mind you. And then it was lights out for that franchise. They still played games during the regular season. They did not play them very well. It's actually interesting because the Blue Jays had that long playoff drought as well. They've been back a few times since that drought ended. Haven't made it to another World Series. They've gotten as far as the ALCS. But I feel like the fan bases have both experienced the same thing in that they had, you know, after the Blue Jays won that second World Series in 1993, they didn't go to the postseason for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And it was just mediocre baseball. And it was like once in a while, they'd make a big signing, they'd make a splash, but the splash wouldn't really pan out. And people would be like, oh, yeah, forget that.
Or they'd have a good season, and the Yankees and the Red Sox would both win 93-plus games.
Those are back in the Eric Hinsky days, as we like to call them, right?
You're describing my entire childhood here, by the way.
Yeah, no,
this era of the Jays.
You don't remember much of the World Series or anything like that?
I was 2 years old.
Because the cool thing about being a Jays fan from the mid-'80s on was because you had that growth and you had the pain, but ultimately you got your World Series title, right? Like 85, which I believe was the first time they ever made the playoffs. They played the Royals in the that would have been the ALCS then,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there was like the league championship.
Back when baseball was real.
Back when men were men, and you know, you when you won the pennant, you know, and
steroids were just a gleam in their eye.
Exactly, but they went up 3-1 on the Royals and they blew that, and then the Royals went and did the exact same thing to the Cardinals in the World Series. That was like George Brett's team.
Yeah, so
that
was the Don Denkinger series.
That was a long time ago, and then the Jays had years where they blew leads and down the stretch and didn't get into the playoffs. And then they finally got over the hump in 1992 and then did it again in 1993. So there was a great great closure on that era. But then it just, like, my Blue Jays fandom went away in large part, too, because, like, they were, you know, mostly because they were just boring. They were just like a mediocre franchise.
There was the Clemens years for a couple or one season, and then
the entire Carlos Delgado era where he was a great Blue Jay. It was wasted. Yeah. They didn't do anything with him. It's funny though because this postseason, and again, this isn't us just trying to manufacture good vibes and good feelings, but you've got the Jays in, which from a Canadian perspective and our perspective is great and everything. You got the Mariners in, and that in addition to being a local / kind of local story is also the historical context of the 20-plus year playoff drought. I forgot to mention this yesterday. It was in my What We Learns. Right after the Mariners snapped their playoff drought, the second longest drought in Major League Baseball playoff history currently, was the Philadelphia Phillies, and they got in as well. It was 11 years for the Phillies, right?
And man, it looked like they were going to blow it at one point, right?
Yeah, so you've got great stories on both sides of the ledger here going in. You got fan bases that haven't been to this situation in over a decade, over two decades in the case of the Mariners. So I'm genuinely excited.
Well, the Padres are in it.
Yeah, I'm genuinely excited for this.
Yeah.
The only bummer is that the series between the Jays and the Mariners could be over real fast. Mm-hmm. Again, we mentioned the schedule Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you could be like, right on, the playoffs are starting on Friday. And then 48 hours later, you could be in a drunken stupor saying, what happened? We're now out of the playoffs.
Well, you know, a lot of people will call our show lazy. And you guys don't work very hard. And that is true. But I just want you to know something.
Okay.
We were given the option to take Monday off because it's Thanksgiving. And we said, no, we shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We should work the holiday Monday because we're going to have the Canucks firing up for their season, but also this series. Like, I wanted to come in on Monday and talk about this series. It's going to be over by Sunday. It might be over by Saturday, but Sunday at the very latest, and then to talk about it. This is such a great time of the sports year.
Yep.
And I know that we've talked about how excited we are for these next couple of months. It's not an act. We're not just hyping stuff up. I mean, we've got this series, which we knew that the Blue Jays were probably going to be in the playoffs, and we've known for a while that the Mariners were in the mix, were probably going to be in the playoffs, but we didn't for sure know that they were going to play each other in this series. Like, yeah. this is a real bonus. We've got the Canucks starting the regular season next Wednesday, so that's a week from now. They've only got two preseason games left. We've still got the NFL, and again, the World Cup is soon. Like, we're going to have an awesome next couple of months sports.
Don't forget Sunday, decision day for MLS and your Vancouver Whitecaps. Win and you're in, lose and you're out.
Could have a home playoff game for the BC Lions.
Yep. Okay. We do want to get to one more baseball story before we move things along here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sports Net 650.
One.
Just a little one. Yeah, we really buried the lead here. Aaron Judge yesterday became the all-time home run leader for the New York Yankees and the American League, knocking his 62nd home run of the season out of the yard in Texas, breaking, again, the AL record and the record he shared with Roger Maris. Now, last time we did this, we played the Michael Kay call, the television call from the YES Network. We're going to turn it over to longtime Yankees radio play-by-play man John Sterling on the Sterling Cam, calling the iconic home run, the 62nd home run, to make him the Yankees' all-time home run king. Here's Aaron Judge going yard and John Sterling on the call.
Here's the 1-1. Swung on.
There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record. Aaron Judge hits his 62nd. All the Yankees out of the dugout to greet him. Just think of it. Three Yankee right fielders. The Babe hitting 60 and 27. The Jolly Roger hitting 61 and 61. And now Aaron Judge hits his 62nd home run. The most home runs any American leaguer has hit in a single season.
Oh, you missed the kicker.
For 120 years, this is Judgment Day. Case closed.
You nearly cut the kicker. We had all the investment in there.
John Sterling's waited his lifetime for that call. That was anyway.
It took a lifetime to make that call, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the big difference between a TV and a radio call, right there. Right? It's like radio. You have no visual aid. You're like, I'm talking my way through this one. But you know what? I got to admit, Judgment Day, case closed. That's not bad.
That's not bad.
He might have written it ahead of time, but it's still not bad.
Oh, I'm pretty sure
he
did. Yeah.
Okay. As for the ball, so Aaron Judge's historic home run, it was hit. Now remember, this was in Texas, Section 31, Row 1, Seat 3. I'm sure all of you have seen the replay, but if you hadn't, there's a gentleman by the name of Corey Yeomans who caught the ball.
Okay.
There's a guy about
Corey Ravioli?
There's a guy about six seats down who was nowhere near the ball, but made the God's honest jump. And I later realized he wasn't making the jump to catch the ball.
No, he was just getting down into that bullpen area.
Just in case. But that's, you know, I don't
know
much.
It was savvy.
I don't know much about heights, like in terms of the relative danger from which you can jump.
He broke his leg.
Yeah, it felt like a real gamble with your ankle.
Well, who was the guy that jumped for that field goal in the early 90s?
That was a Bears-Packers game.
That was a big jump. He was into the
top. But he caught that, and he had a mullet and Zubaz pants. Like, he was ready for that.
Yeah, that was his life.
Well, I interviewed him after, and he's like, I played high school football. I was ready.
No
for
kidding.
It.
Yeah.
He mentioned that right off the top, you don't say. But this guy, who wasn't the guy that caught the ball, Corey Yeomans, made the jump, didn't get anywhere near it. So they estimated right off the hop at the price of the ball being $2 million. And then Darren Revelle, who all I had to do was go to his Twitter for the research on this. I didn't even have to wonder if he was tweeting incessantly about all the facts and details. But he, for as annoying as he is, he's useful in moments like these. He brought up a good point. That ball is now worth $2 million. But if Judge doesn't do anything else in the regular season,
right?
If there's no 63 or 64, mm-hmm. that ball probably gets closer to $4 million. So that's a pretty amazing thing. You know, as my understanding is that Corey Yeomans is not doing too bad financially. He's a Dallas investment VP.
Good for him.
Yeah, it's nice when good things happen to people that are down on their luck. But this is one of those things where...
Well, the markets have been down a little bit.
This is one of those things where... I feel as though it's going to have more value than any of the Bonds home runs and Sosa and Maguire's, even though he's 9 home runs shy of the home run record, right? Like, this is the American League record, which I guess is a thing. But for Yankees collectibles and for the purity and the sanctity of it and who he beat to get to that mark, Corey Yeomans could be a very rich man with that baseball.
Well, Aaron, what happened to my microphone?
We are having technical difficulties
what
here.
What happened to my... There it
there
is.
There you go.
Aaron Judge is going to be a rich guy, too.
Yes.
So the Canucks made a little bit of news yesterday, and we're going to have some hockey talk coming up with David Amber. We'll talk about the Matthew Barzal contract with David and what it means for the Islanders, whether Barzal is worthy of that contract, what it might mean for, I don't know, a guy like Elias Pettersson. You know, Barzal to me has been obviously an impressive player in the NHL. He won the Rookie of the Year, but it feels like he's underperformed his potential in the last little bit. If Pettersson really goes off this season, I think he'll be in line for a bigger contract.
Sure.
Than Barzal's.
He could be a $10 million a year guy. He could be a double digits AAV.
Yeah. For sure. Listen, Barzal is a terrific talent, and I'm not trying to say that he's a bad hockey player. He's a really good hockey player. Defensively, he's not terrific. He doesn't score a lot of goals. He's a puck distributing center. There is some criticism of him sometimes that he makes the easy pass. You know, like, he should lean on his playmaking a little bit more. I don't know. Maybe things will be different on under a different coach. A different system. Who knows? The Islanders made a big bet on Matthew Barzal, though, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be happy with all that money he's going to be making. What does it mean for Elias Pettersson? We'll have to wait and see how Petey plays this season and maybe next season. Mm-hmm. The Canucks news of the day yesterday really was that Danny DeKeyser was released from his PTO. I don't think that surprised anyone. He didn't stand out in a great way. He's not the fastest skater, and the Canucks already have issues with the mobility of their back end. Christian Wolanin took the league by storm.
And Andy.
And he took Andy by storm.
Still thinking about it.
Still thinking about Christian Wolanin.
I drew his portrait last night.
And what we're going to talk about...
Do you want to see it later?
I don't.
I'll set up streaming just for it.
He's got it tattooed on his back.
So what we're going to talk about after we talk to David Amber is just the decisions that the Canucks need to make, because in just a few days they're going to need to set their final roster and they're going to need to get under the cap. And Mike will tell the story of how he was the unlucky person on a chat between me and Drance last night. On old Messenger, and
old Messenger, it was the most exhausting 20 to 25 minutes of my life, because you guys had a conversation just back and forth. I didn't check my phone for 10 of the 20 minutes, mm-hmm. and I had 37 unread messages between Drance and Brof. And there's actually a function on iMessage, I didn't realize this at the time, where you can opt to leave the conversation.
Right,
but I couldn't do it, and I think it's because I didn't start the conversation. I wanted to have a dialogue with my phone. It's like, you know, I'm not actively involved.
So you're
in
trapped
this.
In some special sort of hell.
I was like, Siri, get me out of this. Siri, undrance me.
So the whole chat was me putting together this potential lineup for the Canucks and Drance seeing if he can make it cap compliant via cap friendly.
It was just about as exhilarating as he made it sound. All 67 messages in total in the end. Now, you guys did
is going to be a lot of math.
You guys did
to make the Canucks
cap
compliant.
You guys did a lot of work. I'll give you credit. You guys did. You crunched some numbers. You figured out who might need to start on LTI or LTIR. It was very exhausting. That's how I'll put it. But you guys did the legwork. We can get into that, because I guess the reality of this is, as much as I want to stick my head in the sand and ignore it, there is going to be a cap compliant component that the Canucks are going to need in basically a week. because the start of the regular season is essentially a week today, and they're going to need to get their financial ducks in order. So we will talk about that as well. But you mentioned we have David Amber coming up next. He's going to be a regular guest on the program this year as we go across the NHL and look at all the different Canadian teams on a week-to-week basis. We will start that next. David Amber, the host of the NHL on Sportsnet. That's coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Time now for Sportsnet 650 traffic from the City News 1130 Air Patrol.
Kawhi up top, looks at the clock, turns a corner for the win! Got it! Kawhi Leonard! What the game winner!
6:32 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Your home of the Canucks. I should mention, we mentioned this earlier, a Canucks game tonight, not televised, but that's okay. Right here on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks, we have Canucks Talk from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. today. We have Canucks Central from 4 p.m. till 6 p.m. today. And then the Canucks and the Oilers from Abbotsford. Our broadcast starts at 6 o'clock and runs all the way till 11 o'clock. You really could call us your home of the Vancouver Canucks. This is the Halford and Brough Show you're listening to now, though. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. To the phone lines we go. Happy to be joined by our next guest. It's been a while since we've spoken to David Amber from NHL Sportsnet coverage here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, David. How are you, bud?
Jason, Mike, how you guys doing?
We're well. We're getting excited for the start of the regular season. I imagine you guys back in Toronto at Sportsnet Studios must be getting excited as we get through this slog of a preseason. It can drag on at times, but we're through the looking glass now. We're basically 1 week away from puck drop on the start of the regular season, which will be a quote-unquote normal regular season. Everything's kind of back to the way we know it. I am very excited for the start of this NHL campaign.
Yeah, you know, thank goodness we're just back. Let's, fingers crossed, 82-game schedule on time, you know, keep the summer nice and long for us and just knock this out. Talking to some players, they wish the preseason was one game or two games, not, you know, seven or eight games. But I guess they need it. But at the same time, we've seen so many injuries. I don't have to tell Canucks fans, we've seen so many injuries this training camp and preseason. And I'm wondering if the PA will see if there's a way to even reduce the amount of stress put on these guys before you start that 82-game grind.
I wonder if it's going to be tough for some teams to make roster decisions with the injuries as well, just because they have to get under the cap. And if you're on a simple injured reserve, then you still count against the cap. But if you go on LTI, then you got a situation where you're going to miss like 10 games.
Yeah, there's going to be some juggling taking place for sure and a lot of decisions to be made. And you know, there's been some really interesting battles at camps across the league as far as players trying to really make that impression, not just make the lineup, but, you know, crack into the top six, like young guys who want to be given that legitimate chance not to play in the NHL, but to be a prominent player in the NHL. So there are a lot of battles and decisions to be made. But, you know, most teams, the way the structure of contracts are done, you know, they 15 of the 20 spots are basically locked in. So it is a bit of a long approach for what seemingly is you know, a handful of players to be discussed, but then the injuries add a whole new wrinkle, as you said. So it's going to be, there'll be a bit of cap gymnastics taking place for many teams that are up near the top. And some of those teams that have a bit more buffer, you know, they could even maybe try and take advantage of that and say, hey, you know, you've got this young guy who's going to apparently make your lineup. That means you've got maybe higher paid veteran that isn't going to make the lineup, then we'll gladly take them off your hands. So I'm interested to see, there's going to be, you know, a whole bevy of sort of transactions, I imagine, in the next 4 or 5 days. And some of them will probably pique all of our interest.
Who do you consider to be the best hockey team in Canada right now?
Man, that's a great question. I'm going to say Edmonton. And, you know, I'm going to say Edmonton for a couple of reasons. One, they obviously went the furthest last year in the playoffs of any Canadian team. Two, you know, they've addressed their goaltending seemingly with Jack Campbell being there. They didn't suffer any significant losses to their personnel. And, you know, three, they're going to have McDavid and Draisaitl, two of the top, you know, handful of players in the league, back and healthy. And when you have those two, you certainly have a very good chance to you know, to win games. So I would say Edmonton, but I say that knowing that Vancouver, Toronto, Calgary all have very competitive clubs, and if things roll right for any of those three teams, they could be the best team in Canada down the road.
Calgary's going to be fascinating to me just because they've made such big changes, but the expectations are going to be the same, and people kind of play plug and play, and they're like, okay, well, this guy will play this guy will play this guy, and the Flames should be fine. But you never really know how things gel, especially when you're talking about top players in the league.
You don't. I still say Brad Trey Living, Brad Pascal, that whole management group did such a fantastic job. You know, their hands were tied in the sense that Johnny Gaudreau, they made him a very good effort. I mean, he left money on the table. They did everything in their power to re-sign him. And then they had to go to plan B once they realized he was gone. And yes, Matthew Tkachuk is, you know, as Brian Burke used to love to call him, a unicorn, right? A guy who can get under your skin, a guy who can agitate, a guy who can score 30 goals, right? Like he can do everything, you know, sort of a preeminent power forward in many respects. But, and it cost, you know, cost them losing him, but to get Huberto, to get Kadri, and quietly they got Uyghur. And Uyghur's, and it gives them a lot more depth on the blue line. They signed Huberto, they signed Kadri. Like, I think they did a phenomenal job knowing what they were up against. You could argue, and I might make this argument, that they're a better team today than they were the team that lost to Edmonton in five games in May. I really do think, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, great player. I know he scored the Game 7 OT winner against Dallas and had that incredible season this year and et cetera. But, you know, when push comes to shove in the playoffs, we've seen Kadri can be a difference maker in so many different ways. He provides so many different elements. And, you know, if they do match up with Edmonton again, which would be phenomenal in the playoffs, you know, Connor McDavid even said in his press conference earlier this preseason, he's like, oh, man, I got to deal with Nazem Kadri. It's a fun battle, but, you know, I'm going to be seeing a lot more of him. And it's true. We saw what that Colorado team was able to do to Edmonton. And now you have Kadri, a guy who, you know, could be such a good agitator and such a good sort of shutdown guy. And he takes that challenge on quite personally. I remember when he was with the Leafs and McDavid would roll into Toronto and Kadri would give him fits. So they might in many respects be a better team, Calgary, now than they were at the end of last year, but time will tell.
You know, the really interesting thing about Calgary, and I know that everybody's home opener is a big deal, and there's lots of intrigue and drama around all of them, like Vancouver and Edmonton will get it going, so that's an all-Canadian matchup. But Calgary, and it's basically, you know, a week tomorrow, is going to play at home the defending Stanley Cup champion, Colorado Avalanche, so that new trio of Huberto, Kadri, and Uyghur is going to get to test against the best team in the NHL, and you get the subplot of Kadri going up against his former Colorado Avalanche team that he helped win a Stanley Cup. Like, again, I know all these first home debut and first games and opening night games are intriguing. This one, to me, is maybe the most intriguing of them all.
There's so many good storylines this year, and I know fans in Calgary are really anticipating, you know, Columbus versus Calgary so they can let Johnny Gaudreau really hear it. And, of course, when we get Florida versus Calgary, there's going to be Huberto versus his former team and Tkachuk versus his former team. And now we also get Tkachuk versus Tkachuk much more often, Florida versus Ottawa. So there's a lot of fantastic storylines. But, yeah, that's a really compelling one, and that might be a really good benchmark right off the hop. You know, that Pacific division, it's funny, guys. A year ago, I said, I think it's the weakest division in hockey because I just looked at the three California teams and you looked at Seattle and you said, and Arizona's out of the division now, but you looked at it and you sort of said, there's definitely an opportunity here. Then you see what LA did last year and you see, you know, essentially a Calgary team, an Edmonton team, a Vancouver team that's going to be improved. It's going to be a real battle in that division. I'm really excited to see how that all shakes down. But, you know, I think there's so many good storylines going into this season. And what makes it pretty cool is, you know, there's probably 10, 12 teams that you can start the season saying, yeah, I could see them as a Stanley Cup team. And you can make an argument. You can make a rationale for that team to be a Stanley Cup winning team. So when you go in like that, it keeps the fan bases engaged. It keeps certainly the media engaged, and it makes for a good product. So let the games begin, because we can talk all we want, but until we start seeing the teams play and see who's playing up to their potential and who's not, it's all just jibber jabber, right? And one thing I'll say, and I don't need to tell your fan base this, I mean, let's see how the teams start, right? Because Vancouver essentially buried themselves in the first 25 games last year. Ottawa, for the last 4 years, and I know they haven't been a very good team, but it's funny, the last 3 years they've played above 500 after the first 2 months. Like, they've been a better than average team, but they've buried themselves the last few years, so they've had no ability to make the playoffs. Will this team with DeBrincat and all the changes they've made, you know, will they now come out of the gate stronger? Will a guy like Giroux keep that team more balanced and the ability to stay in games and have that sort of 500 record going into December that allows them to maybe, you know, push for a playoff spot? So there's so many good storylines that we're keeping an eye on heading into the year.
Yeah, I cannot remember a season in Vancouver when there's been so much stress or so much like not so much. Well, I can remember the stress, but so much stressed on the importance of the first 10 games or the first 20 games. You know, we've been talking about it, media fans, but the team has as well. You know, they know what happened last season. It's, in fact, it's happened the last couple of seasons. They've just buried themselves with and then you're like, you know, it's a whole season of just teeing off on management, coaching, players, and, you know, even though they made a good run of it last year, it was going to take a miracle for them to make the playoffs, and they fell short. Speaking of teeing off, people are teeing off on Hockey Canada, and listen, I get why, if you've worked in the sport for your entire life, you've dedicated your working life to the game, I get why people at Hockey Canada, whether you're on the board or the executive, why they might feel that some politicians are grandstanding or using this to score political points. I get why they might see some media takes on this and look at them and be like, that isn't even true. Like, you're trying to score points on social media. But what I don't get is how there does not seem to be an understanding that people want change. And no matter how these people feel, they really need to step aside. Otherwise, the organization that they represent, that they have so much pride in, Hockey Canada, is never going to recover. What do you see happening right here? And are you surprised by how much pushback there's been to actual change at the executive level?
Yeah, I mean, that's really well said by you. I think the bottom line is this. What I'm seeing is people are angry. You know, I talk to other families. My son played in the GTHL, Greater Toronto Hockey League, the biggest minor hockey league association in the world, right up till he was 16. And we're talking years and years and thousands of dollars. And, you know, to think that some of our registration fees as families went to, you know, fund things that we would have no part of is really left a lot of people up in arms. And I think what people are really begging for is some transparency, some accountability, and let's find out, like, let's follow the story and find out exactly who's to blame, how things happened. And I'm really curious to see how this plays out. I understand the pushback in the sense that they're trying to defend, you know, there are some noble people there. There are some people who did the right things, but we need to know the people that didn't. And there needs to be a level of accountability. And I'm just curious to see how this is going to play out. And I don't think the level of, you know, disgust and anger is going to wane. I think people are genuinely upset. And as you spoke to it, I mean, a lot of people thought if there's anything we can kind of hold our heads high and kind of pound our chest out in this country, it's about how hockey and how, you know, it's such an important, you know, fabric of our society. And when that gets sort of stripped away and we see some horrible, horrible things potentially that have happened, it really leaves everyone with a bad taste in their mouth. So that's sort of where we are at this point. And, you know, this story isn't going to go away anytime soon. And until the story gets completely told and people feel like the honest truth has come out, then I think this story is going to just keep playing out as it is.
The latest news, which we didn't pass along this morning, but I will do so now, is that Hockey Quebec has passed the resolution of no confidence in Hockey Canada, and the organization said it would be suspending all transfers of registration fees that are normally paid to Hockey Canada. So with that, David, we'll end it and we'll let you go. We want to thank you very much for doing this. Looking forward to another season of NHL Talk. By the time we do this next week, we'll be staring right at the start of the regular season, which should be awesome.
It's nuts. Our first show, regular season show, October 11th, next Tuesday. We have a doubleheader, including I think New York and Tampa is one of the games, which will be fantastic. So we have a great slate of games. It all gets going on Tuesday the 11th. We look forward to that, and I look forward to joining you guys every week.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it too. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Alice. Take care.
Hey, you too. That's David Amber, NHL Sportsnet host here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
So we got a text into the Dunbar Lumber text line here, and it's from Eric, and he says, about Elias Pettersson, you guys are saying that if he has a strong season, he could be in the $10-plus million per year in his next contract. JT Miller has three solid years behind him and a 99-point season, and he signed for $8 million. What do you guys think EP40 is going to do in a single season that will give him 25% more money? I don't see it, but I'd like to hear how you guys got there. Eric, what EP40 won't do in a single season over the next little while is turn 30.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
It's paying for what you're going to get.
You're not just paying for UFA years, you're paying for particular UFA years, and that's very important.
You would be locking up a guy for essentially all his prime years. Mm. There's an argument that JT Miller has already had most of his prime years, mm-hmm. and that's why Elias Pettersson, if he were to sign a long-term contract in the next little while, is going to get a higher cap hit than JT Miller, assuming that Elias Pettersson has a really good season. It's as simple as that.
Go look at his peers that would be in the $10 million per year range. Guys in a similar age that cashed in at that time. Barkov did it when he was 25, I want to say. Eichel did it even younger. These are all $10 million a year guys. Now, Pettersson is going to have to be more than a point-a-game player. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to, as Jason's counted on a number of times, be a definitive two-way center, be a definitive 1C. Like, he's going to have to hit some particular benchmarks, but if he puts up a similar statistical campaign to JT Miller, that means he's going to get paid more than JT Miller because they are going to bank on him getting better and maybe hitting his prime in that window of that contract. Here's the thing.
He'd be like 31, 32 when it expires, right? So you're still a pretty good player though.
Part of JT Miller's current deal is paying him for past accomplishments. It is. It is. I think the Canucks wrote that deal and someone in the room had to say, we're signing him to this very lucrative extension, and we might have seen that the best season that JT Miller's ever going to give us is a Vancouver Canucks.
For sure, yeah.
That's the reality of the situation. I think with Pettersson, you're almost saying the opposite, that the years in which he's on his current extension and the next one might be the best ones of his career. So I'm glad we could answer that for you, Eric. Thank you, as always, for writing. A reminder, if you want to get a hold of us at the show, like Eric just did, get a What We Learned in, or just yell at us about our programming, what have you. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. It is the Smalt alternative. We'll do What We Learns at 8:30 today.
So the Canucks have a game in Abbotsford tonight, and I think you're going to see maybe, possibly, the same lineup that we'll be seeing in a week from now when the Canucks open their regular season. At the very least, I think it's going to be very close to the strongest lineup that the Canucks can put together. I don't know what the Oilers are going to bring over. I had initially thought that, well, they're probably going to go with like a bare bones lineup, kind of like the one that the Canucks just sent to Edmonton recently that, you know, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and the rest beat up on, and the Oilers won that game 7-2. I thought, well, maybe the Oilers will do that, but I think the Oilers might have some sort of team bonding thing out here in Vancouver. I saw them all sturgeon fishing.
Were they doing trust falls?
They might be doing some trust falls. So maybe they're going to bring a pretty good team out to Abbotsford as well. There is some video of Bruce Boudreau going around on social media because what is that thing you do when you can hire someone to wish you happy birthday?
Cameo.
I think you haven't
tried that yourself?
There's a Canadian version too, isn't there? Of Cameo.
Really?
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah.
You guys got to get on Cameo.
I have the shirt I'm wearing right now, the John Taffer shirt from Bar Rescue. My brother got me a John Taffer Cameo for Christmas one year.
Okay.
He talked to me for like, I don't know, 30, 45 seconds about how much he loved Nate Schmidt.
Memo is the Canadian one.
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Memo.
That's right.
But Bruce Boudreau's on it, right?
Boudreau's on it,
because yes. Boudreau, and I just retweeted this from my account, I guess he wished happy birthday to this guy on Twitter. His first name's Ian, and you know, we'll play the whole audio, and he's like, you know, happy birthday, but he also talks about how the Canucks are gonna like ramp it up in the preseason. Now this is like the this is better audio than like reporters get from Bruce Boudreau. So let's just play this right now.
Hey, Seggy, Ian, I mean, listen, it's Bruce Boudreau here from the Canucks. Thanks for letting me put this off for a day. Hey, listen, I got to tell you, happy 47th birthday on October 5th. Awesome. And I know you're a real Canucks fan, and that's awesome as well. And you know what? I don't want any of you, your friends, or anybody else to worry about us Canucks. No, we haven't had the greatest training camp success, but we are going to be fine. We start tomorrow. I know the game's in Abbotsford, but as far as I'm concerned, that's when the season sort of really starts and we'll be ready to go. I want you to know that. Listen, I hope you're well as well. I hope your family's well. And I know that the boys are ready to kick some ass in 22-23. I hope you're ready for it because it's coming. You have a great day and a great birthday.
Should we just get around all of our the entangled media network that we have and just go straight to paying guys to tell us what we want to hear on the radio?
This is why he's doing it. He's starting a new thing. Like beat writers, if they want to get good juicy stuff, they got to pay Cameo.
That's
how it's going.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, we clearly don't have the budget to do
that. We don't have the budget to do that. No.
Yeah.
I mean, we get one Cameo a year.
We probably couldn't get a Cameo for one of the trainers at this point, or one of the guys that, you know, that's a skate sharpener. That's where we're at with the 650 budget. But that was like the most entertaining audio that Boudreau's had in a long time.
No, we haven't had the greatest training camp success, but we are going to be fine.
Oh, I feel better.
B-Riders listen to that like, come on.
So the Canucks yesterday released a projected roster for tonight's game. Now, the thing is, it had too many players for one game. It had a list of 14 forwards, 8 defensemen, and 2 goalies. Obviously, you can only dress 12 forwards, 6 defensemen, and 2 goalies. So a few of the names that they listed won't play. And I'm curious to see how the coaching staff does this. Do they put together their best lineup possible, or do they still give a chance to, like, all the bubble cases? Do all the bubble players play, right? They could do a full lineup, right? They could do, you know, Pearson, Miller, and Garland together. Kuzmenko, Petey, and I don't know, I guess Linus Karlsson right now would
he'd
step
be a
in
bubble,
for,
he's a bubble boy. He's a,
no, but he would be the most likely to step in for Brock Besser. You know, Hoglander, Horvat, Podkolzin, Joshua, Dickinson, Lazar, maybe Dries is a healthy scratch tonight. I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do, but what I do know is the Canucks are going to have to make a lot of little administrative decisions over the next little bit. With the injuries to Besser, Mikheyev, and Travis Dermott, do they... Your laptop, buddy.
I found the mute button.
Put it on.
Now I have pressed it.
Do they start on... maybe Besser's ready to go by the start of the season. He's already skating. He's not shooting, though, so I doubt it. We haven't really heard an update on Mikheyev or Dermott, nothing definitive. Mm-hmm. But if you just start the season on IR, you still count against the cap.
Correct. You have to go on a 10-game LTIR to get the cap relief.
Right. But if the Canucks don't put those three guys on LTI and they're not ready to go for the first few games, then the Canucks might have like a cap situation there.
Yeah. And this would be like something that we've seen throughout time with NHL teams going into the opening night. I remember the Bruins one time had to call some guy up from the American League, Bobby Robbins, who had like never played in the NHL before.
Right.
And they gave him a sniff in the first game because they needed to get cap compliant with the same situation. You can't put these guys on 10-game LTIR because you need them before the 10 games are up. So I think you're right. I think you're going to see some really curious, like, we have assigned this guy to Abbotsford, and you're like, what? Why would you do that? And then you realize that, oh, it's all because of cap machinations, right?
Yeah.
They might start the season with fewer than the allotted spaces on the max roster. Right?
Well, I've
seen that happen before, too.
But the other complicated issue for the Canucks is that they start the season with a 5-game road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they're going to want some extra bodies along the way, right? But if they can't fill out a 23-man roster with healthy players, then they might have to go out on that trip with, like, we got an extra forward and that's it.
No,
do you know what I mean?
That, like, absolutely might be the case.
I just wonder if they're going to have to put one of those McKayev, Dermott, and Besser, you know, pick the guy who's got the longest recovery time and say, listen, we just have to put you on LTI. These are all discussions that, you know, like, I know they don't make the best radio, but keep them in mind when the Canucks finally do release their opening night roster, because there might be some things that you look at and you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. But it's salary cap related, right? They haven't cleared off the Ferland contract. They do have these injuries that are not serious, and that's good, but it means that there's a question of whether or not they go on LTI.
Lots more to come on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Coming up on the other side, 7 o'clock, Sean Gentile from The Athletic. He's been doing a ton of NHL preview work as the season is just about a week away. So we'll talk to Sean about everything that's going on around the league as we get closer and closer to the start of the regular season. You're not going to want to miss it, so keep it on the dial. It's the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.